Hi, I'm Josh, and you know, of the three movies we watched this week, my favorite one was The Ass. No, wait, I mean The Hole in the Ground. I could never tell those things apart.
Well, it's a similar medical problem between your elbow and your ear, as my grandmother used to say. And it's like, well, I'm pretty sure I know the difference between those two, and I'm not a doctor.
You do play one on TV, though.
Yes, that is true.
Hi, I'm Matt, and none of the movies we watched this week gave me bad dreams, although I'm pretty sure I got a little bit of indigestion after watching one. Which one? Listen on to find out.
Ooh, suspense.
You can't tell me what to do. let's see. So, the other movie that we watched is I'll Take Your Dead. And it's sort of like, I really liked that as like a, you know, you always see those advertisements on the back of, you know, benches or in buses or whatever else for like kind of ambulance chaser kind of lawyers and stuff, you know. And I was thinking like some dude that was the ambulance chasing lawyer like went to mortuary school and then like he just can't get away from like having awful slogans.
And, you know, we'll take your dead, but you've got some serious hail damage there, and there's obviously some city miles there, and it seems like at some point you had the entire engine rebuilt, so the best we can do is probably $500, but we will tow it for free.
Well, of course.
And this is Harsho Hot Dog. So first up... That sounded like somebody clapped and injured themselves, which it was not me this time, and that makes me so happy.
I remain free of the clap.
Do you? It's been a banner week for you, then.
Yeah, you know. You win some, you lose some. Everything's coming up
now. You know how to hold them. You know how to fold them. You know.
Our show when to go week, get though, checked. know right. when it runs. Yeah.
Yeah. Now my brain is trying to write that whole song, and I really want it to not do that.
Shake that off.
Well, if it hurts when you shake it off, please do see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, if you have a run of puns that last longer than 4 hours, then, well, you're in my fucking head. Enjoy. It's crowded in here. Our short this week was Looking Glass, or El Espejo. This is one of those rare animals that we love so much, which is the animated horror short. This has some really wild-ass character design to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen a character with a head that's like a rounded pyramid. Like the kitchen tool that you like push into half of an orange to juice it out is that shape. I don't know what that shape is, but it's like a rounded pyramid is our lead, right?
Head-shaped.
It's not a natural head shape, no.
No, oh, but I mean, if it is in this, and we didn't know what to call it before, and we know what a head is, it's a tautology that I'm proud to stand by.
Oh, sure.
Right, the shape of her head is the shape of not any other head, but her head.
Is head-shaped, it, you know. Yeah.
Sometimes I just don't even know. But... the draw here is definitely our, like, really gorgeous black and white minimalist animation and the design. Story is a little light, but neat. We have a no-dialogue situation. Girl's watching TV. She sees, like, a cartoon doing the mirror gag on the TV. TV switches over to reflection of girl, who then does mirror gag in a way. And then, you know, girl's kind of running scared from reflection. Then reflection tries to warn her of something that is approaching. Reflection in the window is banging on the window, trying to stop whatever's about to attack girl. Window breaks. We hear a scream and we see girl's shoe. So we know something has got her and we don't know what. And the reflection was actually trying to help. And I thought that was super neat.
Yeah, it's a fun little twist.
Well, it has a nice kind of like... It has a nice kind of... I hate to use the word somber because that's not right, but it's like it's got kind of a serious. I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for either, but Something that's one of those words.
I landed somewhere in melancholy, I think.
There you are. That's the one I'm looking for.
You know, with your rainy night and the black and white and, like, the little girl who's alone for whatever reason. And, you know, because she never looks for help. So right. She's just there. And that just leaves you this, like, oh, this sad existence of, like, yeah.
Yeah, cool little thing. I definitely think everyone should watch it.
Agreed.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say that would be a watching thing.
Boy. Pardon me. Says yes. Use your eyeballs. Use your eyeballs for what the good Lord made them for. Watch the thing. I should note that we got started like an hour and a half later than we usually do, dear listeners, because the internet sees our plans and laughs. So we are going to be sloppy, and I'm sorry, kind of not sorry.
It's yeah, the lack fine. Of energy and enthusiasm is not necessarily a reflection on whatever we might be saying. It's a reflection on all of us, like, working and doing stuff all day and starting recording at, you know, 11 at night. So we're all like, we're old.
Well, and it's like, we do plan these things, but then, electronic devices just sort of like go, I see your plans, I'll raise you a I was like, oh, thank you. Yeah, exactly. It's sort of just Tigger on a PCP binge, and it's like, God damn it.
We are the internet's Mickey Mouse to, we're the human Mickey Mouse to the internet's Daffy Duck, or, you know, just like, it doesn't work, right? Like, one of them seems to have their shit in order, the other one is just like, but what if chaos? Like,
I will say I've made myself a tasty beverage to enjoy tonight. You know, they say necessity is the mother of invention. Mm. And I found a bottle of Patron XO, their coffee flavor.
Okay.
Oh.
And I mixed that with salted caramel macchiato flavored coffee mate, kind of half and half. And
wow.
Made like a white Russian, but like a Spanish guy playing a Russian in a shitty movie, I think. Or maybe like a luchador whose shtick is that he's a Russian. What it's I've like, got going yes, on right
it's
now.
It's yes. Luis Stromari.
Comrade Luis. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, no, it says, Luis, rip your mask off.
Oh, there you go.
Is the name of the Russian luchador.
Yeah. Luis Ripkin.
Perfectly done, Joshua.
Well, yes. And his finisher's
pick
the gulag.
Up and drop off.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. No. Oh, he's bringing in his cape. That's not a cape. That's the Iron Curtain. Yeah.
Love this it.
Why he has, right. This is why he has neck and back problems.
If you have neck and back problems, we'll take your dad.
Yes.
I accidentally brought us back to the point.
Hey, full circle.
Because, hey, we're going to start with I'll take your dead or dame tus muertos. I just said give me your dead. That's going to be easier than voy a tomar tus muertos. That's no good. Because that could also mean I'll drink your dead, and I don't think that that's really what we're intending here. Thanks, Spanish. So I'll take your dead is the indiest of indie. Kind of production kind of reminded me in just the way that it was put together of The Witch in the Window.
Mm, where sure.
It's obvious there are some really hard limits on budget and on how many people we can have in this cast and what we can show. But I feel like it managed to work within that budget. So Dude Who Will Take Your Dead is a guy who has been kind of reluctantly many years ago press ganged into processing corpses for the mob.
Yeah, it's like the stereotypical and thing with like the mob doctor, except this is for like the ones that mm-hmm. guy can't fix them or they didn't bother to try to fix yeah. them.
He's like the mob mortician.
Yeah.
Yes. So he just lives out on a farm with his young daughter, and mob folks bring him bodies to dispose of, and he disposes of them. Daughter is, of course, morbidly fascinated with this and occasionally sees their spirits walking about. But the focus is really more on the human drama for quite a while. We end up with a corpse that is not quite dead, and then some interplay between daughter and woman and dude who's titular dead-taking dude. So we get, like, mostly a crime drama with a little bit of supernatural that hits towards the end. But mostly this is, like Matt was saying, kind of a somber rural thing, kind of a character study kind of piece. Matt, you were saying the pacing was a little slow for you?
Yeah, it's... I didn't know anything about this, you know, and so as I'm watching it going, wow, it's been a while and nothing's happened, but we're really given a lot of information about dad and daughter here. So like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, I need to go from horror movie, because for all I knew, I'll Take Your Dead is a movie about someone that, like, you know, goes, okay, my relative's turned into a zombie and you drop him off at this farm and then he just, like, raises them like cattle or something. I don't know. But, like, once we saw what it was, I was like, oh, okay, cool. So this is, like, a somber rural thing. So, okay, like, lean back, settle in, recalibrate. Don't expect a lot of action. And, okay, great. And it's shot really well. I think the performances are pretty great. We talked a little bit in our text chain about the girl being probably 45 and digitally de-aged. Right. But, I mean, she's doing a great job. Like, she's fun to watch.
She's a good actor, yeah.
Yeah, she's really, really good. But then it's still...
There's something about...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, but even, like, recalibrating for that and kind of knowing and appreciating those elements... I felt the weight of the length of this movie because it was really slow. And it just felt like, okay, we all know it. At some point, this is going to break down. And I think I get the relationship between dad and daughter and dad not trusting Chickadoodle tied to the bed or whatever. And like, okay, but we sort of know where this is going. There was no surprise of like, okay, this is going to come to a head. They're going to come back to get her. And then dad's going to be forced to trust her. And then she'll either betray them or go with them. And I think the relationship with daughter will be enough. And... yeah, that's basically what plays out, and that's fine. But I just felt like we could have gotten there 20 minutes sooner, and that would have been fine. Because, I mean, of all the plot meat that happens here, this could be a short. You know, the character study needed all the time. I just don't think that was enough for me to keep me invested in the time.
Interesting. What did you make of it, Johnny?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really feel the pacing too much, because I just was... It's kind of like had a... This is a weird... combination of words, but it's like kind of a meandering suspense where it was sort of like,
all right,
you know, it's like it was suspenseful in the sense that like you had this coming dread of like something bad's gonna happen to these folks, but at the same time, it was sort of like I don't want anything bad to happen to them. And it's sort of like, okay, well, how's this gonna play out exactly, and what's the catalyst here? And you know, they skirt some lines, you know, because she sees stuff in the house, like there's like kind of the radiator monster, and then there's like, you know, and then there's some of those elements, and then there's just sort of like the, you know, the whole plot of like the girl not seeming to understand that the boyfriend guy is not a good guy, like at all, and she doesn't seem to understand that, and so it's like kind of putting one together, unfortunately, but a little bit too late. So how all that stuff's going to play out together. But I just, you know, there's kind of a creeping dread aspect to it that I quite appreciated. And then one of the things that really, really kind of got me and I thought was quite impressive, really, was the main bad guy, the guy with the kind of shoulder-length hair.
The guy that looked like he came out of The Crow?
Yeah. He's like, you were a henchman at one point or other. But he's super interesting because like in the context of, you know, these type of kind of crime sort of setups, whatever else, that character is 70% of the time acted to 11, almost always. Like it's just like, you always have that character and they're just gonna put on a big show. They have these big dumb monologues and all this kind of stuff. And we all buy into it because this is sort of what we do. And it's sort of like in this situation, it just kind of was like, nope. What we're going to do is we're going to have this guy who's just sort of like, isn't putting on a show necessarily. He's kind of a bit of a wise ass, but like, it's not a big set piece of a character, which I was like, it took a little bit of adjusting really to be like, okay, when's his big, you know, freak out going to happen? And I was like, no, we're not having that. We don't have that. And it's just like, huh, that is super interesting. And I was kind of tickled by that. I thought that was interesting.
I agree. I think it's just because he did remind me so much of the dude from The Crow, like the guy who ends up
Fun Boy.
Yeah, fun boy. Like a dude who ends up in the car, like strapped in the car and everything. And he's like, you can't come back. You can't come back. That guy. He was so that guy. But he was dialed down a little further. So I thought that worked quite well. I didn't quite grok at the beginning that boyfriend had kind of set up the hit on girl and was not going to be super enthused to find out that she was alive. But once those pieces click into place, then it's like, ooh, okay, so now we know boyfriend's coming and we know like shit is going to go down one way or another. And then you have that third act is pretty solid, just people getting stalked through the house and, you know, ghosts intervening slightly, but there's a lot of tense moments to be had there, I think, so.
Yeah, the home invasion angle, I think, worked pretty well. You know, I think, Charlie, you kind of hit the nail upon the top with the idea that it's, like, much more of, like, a suspense thing, but I feel like they kept forgetting that you're supposed to, like, hold that build. And so you, like, you know, you're not supposed to keep relieving the tension constantly, or you forget that there is tension. And they spend so much time just being comfortably domestic, or in their own weird way domestic, where it's like, oh, and then all of a sudden she's like, got her cell phone, and she calls boyfriend, and you're like, oh, shit. And then, like, that ratchets it up a bit, but then you go back to them, like, eating breakfast. And you kind of, like, they go long enough between those beats, I think, that for me it didn't let it retain, like, that simmering boil you want. But I think that's probably a better description than what I was able to come up with. But yeah, again, I think maybe just tightening it up a little bit or just adding a scene or two that would break those moments up. We have the really long shots of people just kind of talking slowly and eating cookies.
See, I love that. It's keep you funny, a little more tense. You mentioned the cookie thing because that was one scene that really stood out to me as something that I really loved. I thought that scene was really lovely and not overwritten. I think sometimes you really want to, as a writer, interject some big old long monologue in there, and instead it was just sort of like this like smaller thing, and I thought that was nice. I thought that was kind of
yeah. I think cool that thing. Scene is very well done, but I just think you need more stuff around scenes like that if you're going to try to keep tension involved. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair.
I suppose. I think I was able to just slide into the rhythm of this thing, as much as I really liked the character of. You know, Papa Butcher dude, and just the way that he went about his business and compartmentalized his life. That was super interesting. A girl took a while to grow on me just because, like I said, she is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's head shrunk and put on a 10-year-old body.
Who is
like,
that?
She does not look natural. The new House of Representatives person from New York, who's the liberal that is getting everybody excited.
Gotcha.
Yeah. She tweets. It's lovely. But, yeah, she... Either way, she had the, like... She was the weirdest looking kid that I've seen in a movie since The Ring. Like, the American version of The Ring, where you had that, like, 40-year-old Natasha Lyonne kid. And then, yeah, this was the... Like, at first, I was, that the opening scenes, like, why did they CG her mouth bigger? Is this a zombie? Is she a zombie? Or, like, is that the creature? Like, is this the angle that we're hitting? Like, she's huge mouth and weird face. It's like, oh, okay. Well, the camera angle was a little bit of that. But that is just a... She's going to have to grow into that face. And will probably be striking when she does. But that is not a kid's face.
Yeah, I knew people like that. Yeah.
Some people just got to grow into the face. Some people never grow out of the face. What can you say? Anything else I really need to hit in here? So, were we all okay with the... we spend most of the movie pretty much assuming that the ghosts are figments of the girl's imagination, but in the end, they actually take some action against the villains? How did that sit with everybody? I was okay with it.
Yeah, I think it kind of just... I think it kind of just... It's one of those things where you just sort of, like... You know, in this universe, we shit Skittles. I'm like, okay, well, that's what we're a Skittle shitting group. And it's sort of like, okay, well, you take that on faith. And in this situation, it's sort of like, well, these spirit things have a lot of interaction. And then the little girl is the one that's sort of like by herself a good portion of the time. And they're like, oh, you're paying attention. Like, okay, cool. And then that kind of deal. And like, so there's no really like hard and fast rules per se. It just sort of is. And in this situation, I kind of just took it like, okay, that's perfectly fine. You know, this idea that, like, you know, the mom died in the house and stuff, and so there's all this kind of bad juju going around, you know, and so I don't know, that whole thing just, you know, it just in general, I thought was, you know, it wasn't overcomplicated, it wasn't overexplained, but it wasn't just sort of like completely vague to the point at which, like, this is just people staring out of windows randomly and then being like, you know, then the next scene, there's just sort of a ghost standing there making waffles, you know, sort of like they weren't so esoteric and out there that it was just sort of like, oh, well, what? I don't, is that a real person or are they a dead person? Are they a live person? Like, I don't really know, which I thought was kind of a cool thing. Also, it seemed to suggest without having getting to explaining that it seemed as though different spiritual entities sort of behaved different ways. Like they seemed to, like the purely angry sort of fellow, this playing the piano, like he seems just like very threatening, or there's that thing in the basement or whatever. But then, like the younger boy character, he just sort of seems like he's just sort of like kind of not, he's just sort of sad to be dead. And it's just like, and I kind of like that too, without going into some, like, you know, like some demonologist shows up and explains it for 20 minutes. It just sort of is. And then I just go back to the acting, like the main bad guy and then dad, the butcher fella, is like, that guy's great. Just like not big, not showy, yeah, but just like this very lived in kind of weathered sort of deal. And I think that's really cool. I think there's something to that, you know, I think it brings a lot to it, which is, just, I found that to be really nice.
He was like somewhere in between Ed Harris and Stephen Tobolowsky.
Oh, like, and he's got a little bit of the J.K. Simmons about him too, though.
Yeah, yeah. Although his voice is too high. Yeah, but
the look is sort of there. Like, something about that.
Majestic rumble.
It took me a while to figure out, like, who does he remind me of? And I was like, oh, weirdly this guy. But, yeah.
And Charlie, I'm going to need to have you say skittle shitting 3 times fast.
No, you'll summon him.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to need you to go fuck yourself.
Yeah, it's like, that is not a thing my face is able to do.
That is not a rainbow you're willing to taste. Or a waterfall we're willing to chase. Yeah, so all in all, I thought this was really nifty. Like everything this week, I didn't love it to the point where I'm just going to grab people by the lapels and insist they watch it. But it does make me happy to find stuff like this that's, you know, obviously zero budget, obviously passion project, but works perfectly at being this lovely little small intimate thing. So, you know, I'll go up to 7.5 out of 10 wild horses and the corpses that love them.
Yeah, I don't think I enjoyed it as much as that. I would say it's all shot very well. It looks great. I think our ghosts are fun. They're simple, but that's kind of part of what makes them work, I think, with the exception of your, like, furnace ghost, which I think doesn't look bad. I'm just saying that's the only one that looks like it's got like a lot going on. I think our lead villain's doing a good job. Dad's holding down quite flat. And yeah, it's fine. It's interesting. Like, I wasn't like angry when it got over. I was kind of like, oh wow, like, okay, that was very well done. It was fine. But like, that's, you know, not really exact. Yeah, like you said, Josh, not something I'm going to like be recommending to people, like that is a must see. So I feel like it's only fair to put that at like a 5 out of 10. Let's see, 5 out of 10. Outbreak monkey lie suits.
Dear Liza. I would probably go. I'll be up there with Josh. I would actually say I was actually going to go 7.5. And just the other thing that I like about this too, and I really don't want to be all soapboxy about it because we ain't got the time, but like there's something that's like, so the reason why I heard about this one initially was my friends that here in town that program Other Worlds, which is primarily a sci-fi festival, but it's they do horror stuff as well, and they program kind of a wide variety of stuff. And my friend Mark, who's one of the programmers, like, you know, he'd be the first to admit that you know, some of the stuff that they program was like not super high on the quality scale. Like some of it's like pretty low, kind of campy stuff and whatever. Like It Came from the Desert was one that they did last year, and which I thought it's fun. It's stupid as all hell, but it's fun. But so anyway, like it's a, that's the kind of stuff that they get. But they'll get some pretty neat projects from time to time. They'll get some neat material to show, you know. And I think they've really gotten a lot of cool stuff from time to time over the last few years. And this was one that they got this last year, and they just like, people were just like, yeah, they're super into it. I was like, I don't know what this is. And one of the things that I really like about it, probably made me like it more, is just to look at something like this where they're really trying to make a movie. You know, like they're really trying to make something that looks like a movie and feels like a movie and just has a lot of bigger plans involved. You know, like just from like the set dressing in the basement to like the way in which the camera moves around and the action sequences and stuff. Like, you know, it doesn't look like 48 Hours or Beverly Hills Cop or something like that. Or it doesn't flash around like, you know, some kind of Korean action movie or whatever else. Like they're trying to get their own feel and everything else for what they're trying to do. And so the end result is something that feels very cinematic and feels very professional and feels very thought through. And there's limitations, certainly, and there's some clunks in the script and stuff, but I just admire this type of, you know, approach and effort and energy. And I think it's really kind of cool. The other thing too, and this is super dorky because it has nothing to do with the actual product itself, but when they finally announced that this was going to get released, the people that were releasing it was pretty much by the bootstraps type of thing. They made real goddamn clear where it was going to be available and when it was going to be available and what capacity it was going to be available and all this other kind of stuff. And they did all this work to get it on every streaming platform you could ever imagine and made it easy to find and linked everything together. And I was like, I can't imagine that's like the hardest thing in the world to do, but goddamn it. I really appreciate the effort.
Yeah, but it seems to be, yeah.
Yeah, because it just, I've gotten so used to this. I've just gotten so used to this crap where it's like just this nonstop sort of like guessing game as far as what stuff's available when and all this kind of jazz that, you know, not only did they put effort on, and you can see it on screen, and they put effort in terms of development, all that kind of stuff, but then on the back end, like making it so they really made an earnest effort into just clarity of distribution and release. And so it has nothing to do with the quality of the film itself. I just appreciated that quite a bit. You know, so overall, I thought it was really cool. I would love to see more independent films have this much ambition. And so that was cool overall. And yeah, that young lady, I hope she has a good career ahead of her because, you know, she definitely has a presence, but I also don't know that she's not a, some kind of weird doppelganger person that used to be an adult and now is a child. So, yeah, I'll also say 7, I'll also say, pardon me, I'll also say 7.5 out of 10, 7.5 out of 10, no returns with a receipt or with a pulse.
I like that he has a return and exchange policy in place. And that's clearly stated.
It was on the back of the receipt. If you looked at the back of the receipt, you would see, and no, you cannot talk to my manager.
Actually, I am the manager. Keeping your corpse. Do you want us to move on real quick while we talk about some holes and some ground?
Yeah, let's just roll into a hole in the ground.
Yeah, for sure.
Please don't roll into the hole in the ground.
No, but it would be sweet release. Full of
changelings and things. A hole in the ground, agujero en la tierra. This is weird for me to talk about, because for one thing, it's the first Irish movie that I have not been just completely charmed by.
Mm.
So that's where we're starting. You know, Grabbers was great. There was the, like, Something the Dark, I think, From the Dark. There was the kind of vampire-ish movie that was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, when I see anything like Irish film or in the beginning credits, I kind of go, oh, cool. Like, that's a level up for me, usually.
Yeah, like, I am going to enjoy this. But I ended up not disliking this at all, but just not at all invested in it. So this is a pretty straightforward tale of woman and son who are kind of on the run from a sad past when, you know, father has passed on in some way. And they go live in the countryside, and they have the woods behind their house, and there's a big titular hole in the ground back there. Boy child starts acting weird. Crazy neighbor lady who killed her own son back in the day says she's pretty sure the kid's a changeling. The kid's a changeling. And the lady goes and gets her own son back and burns down the house with a changeling inside it. And then we don't get a stinger of, except now the mom is a changeling or any of that shit. It's just, it's done and we're good.
They flirt around those edges, though, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, a bit.
I mean, not to the point at which it's like galling or irritating. I certainly don't mean like that, but it's like, they certainly do, I think they kind of flirt around those edges a little. You know, where it's sort of like, just the suggestion of like, well, maybe. But also, it also feels like that suggestion at the end, or like, not even suggestion, but just that little bit of a flirting around those edges, it kind of reminds me a little bit of like the end of Frozen, the Adam Green movie, not the let it go, not that one, the Adam Green one.
Yeah.
Where it's sort of like, you know, young lady at the end
Let me go from the ski lift.
Yeah, let it go from the ski lift and bust the fuck out of your legs. You know, we all have that list of scenes in horror movies that just, like, for some reason or other, like, you can just see blood and guts and gore, and there's just something happens in one, you're just like, but there's that scene in mm-hmm. Frozen where it's just, he lands, and it's just like, God damn it. But anyway, like, you know, at the end, young lady survives, technically, but it's sort of one of those things, like, are you alive? Is the definition of being alive just having a pulse? Because, like, I mean, that's, technically she's still alive, but, I mean, basically she's dead. I mean, she's not, you know, technically dead, but it's one of those things where there's a tragedy kind of beyond that. And so they kind of reminded me of that a little bit at the end of this, where it's sort of like, you know, she's taking the pictures and looking at a little bit of a blur in the face and whatever, and then you're seeing her like walking past multiple reflections and then being like, is she ever going to be sure? Or is this one of those situations where she's just never going to be sure, like no matter what? And it's just, She will just always
have,
like, never be 100%. And it's like, and that's a tragedy in and of itself. Because, like, is there always going to be a barrier?
Yeah. The movie was, I watched this with the boy, and it was a little on the slow side for him and predictable enough where I was like, oh, cool, changelings. And he's like, what's that? So, like, we kind of ended up talking over most of the movie as we talked folklore. And then I was, like, pulling out Hellboy comics for him to read. And showing him how to, like, tap a baby with iron, and then how that would let the fairy, like, flip out, and you could know, and all this stuff. And so we just were having this, like, super dorky, like, folklore conversation with, like, historical sources and then comic books and stuff based on the folklore, and just being like, oh, yeah, right, this movie's still going. And then kind of, like, would tune back in. And he's like, what about that? Is that in the thing? I'm like, well, let me go look. And then I'd go pull another book of folklore. We'd talk for a bit, or we'd Google something. So, like, it was fun to watch, I think more because of my experience than because the movie really, like, grabbed me and dragged me through it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it is a familiar enough story. I mean, we know the shape, you know?
Yeah.
Mm. Like, there are some good little moments in there. I liked the lady with her head buried in the sand.
Yeah, it's weird.
Oh, gosh, like, yeah. Ooh,
that was an unexpected image. Like, but, you know, it's sad that, like, the muttering old lady who then is like, that isn't your son. Like, oh, that's just so standard. You know, that is a standard element of horror. And it's not this movie's fault, except for, like, I mean, don't. If you know that that's a thing and then you still do the thing, then you got to kind of own that a little bit.
Not to interrupt you, but is there a thing, and maybe I just don't remember well enough to say, but was there a thing with changelings that they live in the underground lair, like a bunch of chuds?
Well, they're fey, so they would be like, you know, you'd find a fairy ring that you'd walk around 3 times, and then that would let you into the realm of the fey. And the idea is if the changeling swaps your baby, and a human spends more than 24 hours in the fey realm, then it becomes part of the fey. And the one they swap out is going to live and just torment the people and fuck with them indefinitely. Mm. But that's like the way they would add, because the fey can't reproduce, so you have to abduct human children. So this is like their way of drawing them in.
Huh.
They tend to live in, they live in a pineapple under the sea, usually.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah. And they sound a lot like Clancy Brown.
Well, and the only reason I bring that up is that sequence when she goes into the hole and then down underneath or whatever is like, on the one side, it feels limited by not having just like scads of money. But on the other side, it's sort of like, to me, that felt a little bit new-ish. like to me that it felt like it was introducing an interesting element to the whole thing of like just like this just this whole like kind of herd of them.
The access to the Fae being underground is pretty common in a lot of Irish folklore I've read.
Well, I'm talking about like depicted on film though, like in terms of like
I don't think you see that much, but I mean like yeah, that tracks with the mythology, but yeah, I don't know that I've seen it done that way.
Well, that's more what I mean. It's just sort of like cause it just had just having that little like grouping of them all kind of snarling and kind of day-by-day is like geez, that was kind of an arresting thing. The other thing that got me too, and this is again where I just feel like I just my ignorance level or just my memory. The other thing that really got me too was that like, you know, and I'm trying to recall going back in my brain trying to remember what stories I remember from what, you know, and then when he's like. You know, when he's at that thing at the school and they're doing the little dancing thing and that whole jazz. And it's like he, you know, and it's like his, it's going to be his turn to go. And it's like, but he knows the moves and he knows the words. And it's like, well, how much did he absorb or like, is this now an indication that mom's the one just completely losing her goddamn mind? There's nothing wrong with the kid.
And it's like, 'cause he seemed to be at a loss for simple questions sometimes.
Yeah, and that was the thing, like, some of the little day-to-day things, like, you know, this is the game that we play, or this is where the spoons are, or whatever, like, some of that stuff seems to get by the wayside, but then, like, at the thing at the school, when he's got the dance moves down, or the choreography, or whatever, and then, like, has the words down, I was like, that's really gave me a bit of pause, especially when it starts to do the thing where the voice slows down, and then it starts to get weird, and it's like this chasey situation, and whatever, as, like, for a little minute there, I was thinking, like, well, wait a minute. Like, maybe there's just something jacked up with the mom, and, like, I wonder if that's the direction they're going to go. And, you know, it certainly it recorrected, you know, away from that. But it was an interesting little side thing. And so sort of like – so that was the other thing. That was the other part about the folklore that I was having a devil of a time remembering was, like, do they just absorb all the thinking? Or is it just, like, they get some of the thinking? Or how does that work?
I couldn't remember. And, like, most of the changeling stuff I've read is always it's infants. So you're pre-verbal, so it doesn't matter. You know, like there are no skills to imitate or knowledge to have. You just have to act stupid because you're pretending to be a baby. So
you can't just occasionally go, can I just get a latte? I mean, what?
Well, and that is like part of the thing that pops up is like the parents in the stories will say they think they can hear their, you know, 4-month-old speaking. And then when they look, it's just sitting there looking at them. And they're like, one parent always thinks the other one's going crazy. You know, so that's the idea is that they try to swap out for a baby. And then that, I think, which perhaps leads to that idea of not being discovered. Because, yeah, if you have to swap out. And to be fair, if you're going to be singing Rattlin Bog, if you live anywhere in Ireland, you've probably heard that song a bajillion times. Because I know I have. But yeah, like the idea of knowing the moves, unless those are traditional. I don't know. But, yeah. That was a little weird thing because at first I was kind of really digging that. It's like, oh shit, here's your clues, but then they do give you a couple times thinking, oh no, maybe mom's just bonkers. So that's maybe inconsistent. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and
it's hard to sustain. You know.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I just these are not like big refutations and big hills to die on necessarily. It's more just sort of
right.
There's some interesting. You know, just in terms of showing it on film, I think are interesting. And also, you got to hand it to that little boy. I got to say that, you know, a lot of times kid actors, the instructions that they're given, they're always good at the instructions that they're given, but you know, you get these situations where they're just like, they do the big acting face or they do the big whatever and, you know, all that kind of jazz. And getting handed to that kid, I was impressed with his level of like not being overly ridiculous and not being like, Jack Torrance in the third act of The Shining as a kid. Like, it's just sort of, there was a lot of restraint there, which I thought was kind of a nice thing. I thought that was kind of a cool deal. Also, we'll have to tell you guys that this one took me a couple tries to get through. Not for lack of interest. I was just exhausted, you know? But I was like, I'm going to watch it, damn it. So what's going to happen? And, but then I started nodding off when they're interacting with the old lady and like, I was just in the precipice of falling asleep. And then I kind of went, and I think I did nod off. And then when I came to, it's old lady, like running her head into the side of the car. And it's like,
yeah.
I went, I must've missed something. Like, This is like, holy shit.
Something has transpired. It's true.
Yeah, it's just like, holy mackerel. So, you know, it wasn't the movie's fault, certainly. It was just, you know, starting late and then just sort of being whooped and whatever. But that was what that was my comeback to moment where this lady, bam, like, oh, yeah, that's
yeah, I just had trouble investing in this in a weird way because we've watched plenty of far worse acted and plotted and directed and, you know, shot. Like, this has all of the elements in there. It just was lacking anything to really spark my interest, which was weird because I was expecting, like, a story about a kid who's, you're not sure if he's evil or not. Like, that's in my wheelhouse. But, yeah, I watched half of this one night and I was hard-pressed to come back to it. I ended up watching the other two before I even tried. Huh. So, I don't know. This one was super dull for me.
What's your rating on it?
It's just, I'm going to have to just, like, it is competent, it is well done. I'm sure that a lot of people will enjoy it, but for me, it's like a 6 out of 10. Bang, bang, bang on the car, baby.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of in that same wheelhouse. I'm going to go just a little lower because I guess with our arbitrary ratings, like, I think I'll Take Your Dad is a better movie. While this one is similar in that, like, it's hard to find real flaws with it. This is a little more, at least, paint by numbers than the concept of the I'll Take Your Dead one. So I'm going to say it's a 4.5 out of 10. Let's see. 4.5 out of 10. At least they're not all playing green sleeves.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, I probably like this a little bit more. I would say six and a half out of ten. This is another example of another movie, another one of these more indie kind of deals that definitely looks like a movie. And I know that sounds like such a weird thing, and I really have not figured out a way to really narrow this down into something that makes sense. But there's a real texture to the look of it. And, you know, I think you can make valid arguments about pacing or valid arguments about the originality of the kind of core story and stuff. But I do think that this has a really good look, and it just has there's a reality to the way that it looks. And, you know, it's funny because, like, you get the kind of oversaturated stuff and you get the really crazy color stuff and you get all the things that are bright and whatever. And I think just having something look normal is also difficult. Like, that was one of the things that impressed me about, was A Dark Song, was where it's just sort of like, there are shots in that where they could have just gone all style and like with lighting and all this cuts and whatever. And it's like, no, we're just going to have it look normal and that'll do its job. And so I think there's something to be said for just things looking normal. And so there's a lot, I thought this was kind of a cool thing in that regard. Just looking like a movie. You know, I don't know how to tell the Changeling story in a way that would be super unique and fresh, but yeah, I would be curious for somebody to go back into this type of material and see what else they can come up with, because it's certainly interesting.
Yeah, I feel like you almost have to go more Village of the Damned with it. Was it Village of the Damned with the kids, the blonde kids?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Dennis the Menace. You'd want to find out.
Oh, right. Yeah, Dennis the Menace. But, I mean, I think that might be the way to have it actually seem like more of a threat, is that, like, oh, yeah, like, you have some people have these weird experiences with their infants, and, you know, maybe, you know, there's some whatever, and some people are now considered, like, the crazy people in town, but now the kids are all a little bit older, but since they've grown from infant, they all know how to assimilate, but they also have all the powers of being the Fae, and then what happens then? Do we have, like, you know, you hit the next whatever, you know, Samhain, and they decide now's the time to take over the town or something, you know? And then there's, like, a more of a real threat because they're like, okay, that's the gateway to do the ritual that opens the door to the whatever, and then the, you know, your Baba Yaga can show up or whatever, but, you know, to mix your mythologies, but
somebody give me the movie where the same setup that you're talking about for the beginning,
mm-hmm.
but then there is some like fairy monster that attacks the town and the changeling kids have to fight it back.
Mm.
Then yeah, I watched that all day.
Yeah, me too, for sure.
Like the predator novel. Kind of a thing, kind of like, you know, like what hunts the hunting thing, like, oh, that's even a worse bad thing.
Yeah.
Or, you know, do the young adult version where they're like, these kids have always felt that they were different and they've always kind of known that they had these powers and they are maybe being pulled toward the evil side of things, but then here comes a thing that's an even bigger evil that's threatening, like, even though they know it's not their parents and their life, it's the only life they've known. TM.
Oh, yeah. All the TMs.
One of these days, I'll just sit down and write that, and then I will be Mr. Hunger Games. And
please, then, Mr. Hunger Games is my father. You can just call me Games.
I will buy and sell you bitches.
You just call me Skippy.
I'm calling this episode Mr. Hunger Games is my father. And you can't stop me. Fellas, you want to finish this out? Or does anybody need to pee super bad? What are we doing?
I mean, I'm okay. Matt, how are you?
Yeah, we're good.
Yes. Well, I'm fine. Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero. Oliver has this thing, my son, who, because he's super weird, like sometimes he'll just look at you for a couple of seconds and then go, hi. And so I started going, hi, Christopher. I'm Nero, because of like the dumbest line in the Star Trek reboot. And so... Well, first then I had to show him the movie so he knew what I was saying, and now that's a thing. Hi, Christopher, I'm Nero. That, and don't tell me it didn't happen. Did happen. I watched it happen. Don't tell me it didn't happen.
You've unleashed a monster.
Both of those things happen with frequency in my house, and that's fine.
Hmm.
He watched Back to the Future for the first time tonight, how'd that too. Go? That was delightful. We had to explain some of the timey-wimey stuff a little bit.
Sure.
But he was pretty damn entertained, especially that they kept saying, like, ass and damn and stuff.
Oh, sure. Like,
curses, PG movies from 1985. I swear, hell of a lot. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about Bad Dreams or Sueños Malos.
Bad Dreams has, how I used to highlight specific, I don't do it as much anymore, but, like, I used to highlight specific pieces of dialogue from time to time that would stand out as being great lines of dialogue. Bad Dreams has a few of those that are just sort of like, somebody wrote this, like, with their brain and their hands and the typewriter. Like, somebody did that.
Yeah,
somebody
with the straightest face.
It's amazing. This one...
I don't think a lot of the stuff that Dean Cameron says was written. I think he's just playing jazz.
Yeah, I think it's a good estimation, Joshua.
He is in the goddamn zone in this movie. Like, by the way, if you ever meet Dean Cameron again, Charlie, tell him that I love him.
Fair enough.
So much.
Yeah.
Like, Rockula, in a way that I'll bet nobody else would say, Rockula was a formative movie for me. So I watched it when I was 12 and then kept renting it over and over and, like, taped the soundtrack by fast forwarding to the songs and holding a tape player up to the TV.
Nice.
So yeah, and then I saw Men at Work, you know, and then now there's this one where he is just crazy go nuts, and at the end brings like this little beautiful little moment of pathos before stabbing himself a whole bunch. It's just lovely. This movie, from the poster on down, really wants you to remember Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, it feels like it's just a straight off of that, I think, you know? I mean, it's like...
I mean, it turns out, like, it's not that at all, but you do get the, like, the poster has the, like, girl kind of sleeping, and then there's the burnt arm reaching up, and then there's all that imagery of the guy being burnt, and then the dreams, and... Yeah, so the interesting kind of... marketing attempt there, but this is more of a seems like a supernatural cultist thriller for most of it, and then at the end it's, oh no, the doctor was just giving them the wrong medication on purpose to make them all freak out.
Which, goddamn, is that great. Evil? That whole thing was like once that revelation kind of comes to pass, which, I mean, saying revelation comes to pass is to give the script a ton of credit, which is, you know, I mean, that's not, shouldn't be that much of credit, but It's like, when that revelation comes to pass, you're like, well, goddamn. Like, Jesus, that's a hell of a thing. That's a little bit of darkness. Also, I always feel really bad whenever I see Richard Lynch in a thing. And I always think, like, that he just looks like, there's another actor that I think he looks like, where it's sort of like, it's like if that other actor that I'm thinking of, it'll come to me within the next few minutes, I'm sure. The actor that I'm thinking of, that he looks like. And it's sort of like, I always think like, okay, it's like The Fly, like the device that they come up with in The Fly, where it's like, you put a person in there, and then an accident, the fly gets in there, and then he turns into the fly. It's as if the other actor that I'm thinking of, and like some balls, like got into the fly machine, kind of, because he just sort of looks like this like saggy kind of sort of skin sort of approximation of this other actor, and it's driving me insane.
So this is the interesting thing. While you're thinking about it, I had that moment too where like, oh my god, and on a like big TV with a clean copy like this is, you can really see the texture of his skin is just off. And so like maybe we've reached the point where the internet can tell me why. And in the late 70s, apparently he got super high in a park and set himself on fire.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Are you shitting me?
And
I feel bad about that ball
burned stand. 70% of... But it's true, like, the texture of his skin is very bizarre. You know, it burned 70% of his body.
I kept waiting for that to be, like, explained as, like, it being an applique right? later on. Yeah.
No, and then after that, he, like, cleaned up his acting, got into acting, and, you know, plays all the heavies because that's the face that he's working with, you know? Like, so it seems like he was a remarkable dude, but, I mean, that is an elephant in any room. You can't just overlook the fact that that is not a normal face, you know? And the fact that in this movie, he is playing a guy who sets his entire cult on fire.
Yeah, that had to be tough, dude.
Is kind of amazing. You know, like, what the fuck was going through his mind while they were filming the scene where he's dousing everybody with gasoline, right?
Wow. That's bonkers. Good job doing your homework, because that... I will sleep better and worse tonight.
I was going to say, that's a both.
So yeah. Richard Lynch, who knew? Yeah, like... Because, like, in a soft focus, he looks like everybody's grandma.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. The older he gets, the more he looks like the hip lesbian grandma. And then you look up close, and his face is almost entirely scar tissue.
Huh.
So...
This is bonkers.
In this movie, he plays the charismatic cultist who... suicides his whole cult by fire. One woman survives, and 13 years later, she wakes up from her coma, plagued by visions of a cult leader wanting her to join him. And then the people around her are dying, including Dean Cameron and E.G. Daily, who is the voice of like half the Rugrats and the Powerpuff Girls and everything.
Hmm.
So that was wild to have her in there, because the last thing we saw her in was that Rob Zombie thing,
yeah.
31.
Oh, yeah.
Where I was like, did I need to see Chucky from Rugrats boobs? I did not. And then seeing her in this, like, oh, shit. I did not recognize her until I heard it in the voice. There's that little something in there, you know? Like when Yardley Smith is in anything. Yeah. Like, you are Lisa Simpson and always will be.
Yeah.
Well, and then the other...
So I had fun with this.
I did too. I think it was like, it was just weird enough, and it was just so off the wall that like, it was like, where are we going with this story, or what's the plan here? And then like, just, you know, it almost seemed, and I don't know this, but it almost seems as though they were like, okay, we got this movie, and we got this plan, and this is the story we're going to tell, and this is going to be great. And this is what we're going to do. And they're like, okay, cool. And then they start working on it, and they're like, wait, did you bring a copy of the script? Did you have the shit? Well, why don't we do a thing where like the doctor guy goes crazy for a little while, and then we'll do it as like a dream sequence and whatever. And that's what produced my favorite line in the movie, which was, if you don't like the way I drive, Dr. Addictive Buttface, stay out of the parking lot. And I was like, wow. Wow. And it was like, but I just, it's like, it feels like they had an idea. I
deeply enjoyed that dream sequence.
It was just bug shit crazy. And it was like, But that's what I mean. Like, I think they had like this plan for the movie, and then 2/3 of the way through, they were like, "Yeah, but I mean, what if we just completely just kind of go sideways and just let's see what happens?" And it's just like, and away we go. And it was just sort of like, man, oh man, it was just like, I mean, it didn't have the level of like that Piscopo one, Dead Heat. It didn't have that level of frenetic, crazy, bonkers energy, but I mean, like, it has some. I mean, it's like the entire third act is like, what are we doing here, kids? Like, wow. And so, I mean, I just, you know, I was never bored by
it. On the one hand, though, that reveal is kind of great, though, the way that builds, because you got Doctor, like, same Doctor gets fired and is leaving. And he's like, fuck it, I'm so depressed, I'm going to take one of the inmates' pills. It takes it. Sits in his car, has this whole whacked out dream sequence where he runs over the doctor multiple times in hilariously gory ways, wakes up, and then he's like, the fuck? That's not what, you know, lithium or whatever is supposed to do, and goes running to his buddy in the pharmacy and has that whole thing of like smashing open the thing where the doctor has set up the inmate's pills for the next day. Like, she's supposed to be on lithium. Is this what lithium looks like? And the guy's like, hell no, that's a pill that'll make you go completely bugfuck psycho and make you think you're seeing cult leaders all over the place. It's a known side effect. Like,
whoa. Isn't he?
It's like, yeah, if you see cult leaders for more than 4 hours, call a doctor. Like, if that, I love all of that. That
wasn't
was amazing.
He, Matt, isn't that guy, the guy who plays the guy in the pharmacy, isn't he a kind of an old school comedian?
Yeah, I was trying to place it and I forgot to look it up.
I can't think of his name. I knew his face immediately. It was like, oh yeah, that's him.
Like, oh shit!
I could not think of who it was, but I thought that was like kind of an older school, like kind of post Catskills, pre comic relief kind of era comedian.
Yeah, exactly. Somewhere between like the Catskills and the comedy boom of the '80s.
Yeah. I was trying to place him. I was just like, I couldn't for life figure it out.
I'll try to figure it out. The whole medication thing, though, raises so many questions. Because, like, hey, is this what lithium looks like? No, of course not. Well, so were you just getting these prescriptions sent down from, like, evil doctor that were like, I want the one that is most likely to make this patient psychotic. Okay, I'll fill that prescription.
No, evil doctor, he said evil doctor was coming down there
and doing it
specifically
himself.
And saying... Yeah, I don't want anybody fucking with my patient's medication. I'm the only one who knows how to do it right.
Ah, got you. Okay. So that explains
that
part.
He was setting up all the pill cups and not letting anybody else touch them.
And then the other part was like,
what the pharmacist guy said.
They just walk around with like their little hors d'oeuvre tray of pills, and the patients just kind of walk up and grab a little cup and chug them. I was like, that's not a great way to regulate who's taking whose medicine. Like, right. You know, like... yes, would you like the cucumber set? Nope. I guess you'd like the sushi. Very well. All right, then. Sushi is today. Good luck with that.
So that kind of reminds me of the other thing that I wanted to make sure that I brought up and make sure to address. Like, I watched this one full awakeness, like, never, no sleeping, no falling asleep, no nodding off, whatever else. I was fully engaged in this crazy thing. And so, like, I don't think that I missed an element of the story, and I wanted to make sure that maybe in case I did, you guys can fill me in. So was there like a whole sequence of the movie where like brunette lead lady like is sort of back to normal and her brain is back to normal and her and Dr. Guy like go shopping, go for a picnic, have a fun, like go see a movie, hang out for a while, get to know each other, like really develop like a relationship? Because like it's completely out of left field. He's like, you're supposed to be with me and then I love you and all these things. And I was like, wait, what happened?
Yeah, I think that was just because movie. Yeah.
It was just like all of a
sudden.
Because
I had the same question.
That's in the director's
cut. It was just like all of a sudden, yeah. There's like all this crazy motivation. I mean, I understand Dr. Patient. I understand the idea of all those things. And like, you know, certainly. But his was very much this is the third act of like, of kind of like a romantic kind of drama / thriller where it's like he's got to make sure to save the love of his life at all costs. Like, I missed that whole beginning part. Like, yeah, it's like, maybe I missed something, I guess. I'm not really 100% sure, but I was like, but I wanted to make sure to bounce that off y'all, because I was like, I must have lost my goddamn mind, because it's just like, I was that in there? Did I just miss it or something, or what? Because it's like, but boy, howdy, does he get all kind of, you know, right in on the white stallion kind of thing all of a sudden. was like, this is weird.
No, if you missed it, I missed it too, because it seemed like it was just, well, it's the end of the movie, and somebody's got to hook up with somebody. So these are only two characters that are apparently not evil, so now they're in love.
Well, and it's like,
and the nicest thing we've seen him do for her is say, please continue doing therapy, which is, you know, what a doctor should say to his patient.
When you cast Jennifer Rubin in that role, I mean, like, not to be a pig or anything, but especially during that era of her career, like, she's really, really pretty and, like, just very striking looking in general. But she, I think she does just a fine job. It wasn't just like they just, it wasn't like Killer Mermaid where they just sort of like, okay, you look good in a swimsuit. Come over here. You know, be in this movie for 2 days. Like, this is more like she's an actual actress, but it's just sort of one of those things where it's like, okay, you cast a really pretty actress. So, of course, there's got to be a romantic angle. Does a romantic angle make sense? Not even a little bit.
No, you just got to shoehorn that in a little bit. I like the final standoff on the roof, though. That was fun. With, like, doctors, like, turning back and forth into Richard Lynch, and then they're, like, the girl is dangling, the guy is dangling, the cop comes in at the last minute. That was all good stuff.
Also, it's got the stabbing. Okay, I'm sorry, but stabbing a hand with the syringe? Jesus Christ, on a cracker.
That was just mean. I gotta stab with a syringe. That and the double scalpel to the stomach that Gene Cameron does.
Oh, that's so good.
Surprisingly effective.
Yeah, that's cringy.
Yeah, that's good. Charlie, did you recognize the crazy doctor, evil doctor from Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Actually, I did recognize him. I didn't. This is one of those ones.
Because that one took me forever.
Because it's one of those ones. He's yet another one of those guys where you look at him and you go, I know you. I don't know. How's...
Yeah, like you've been in 10,000 movies. Like, which one am I thinking
of? Yeah, and it's like, and that just happens with those type of actors where you're like, I know that face. I know who this is. How do I not, like, God dang it. Like, why can I not place him? And you just, your brain just goes into overdrive trying to figure it out. And it's just like, it's one of those things, especially with stuff from this era, you know, because we have enough embedded, especially with some of these actors where you've seen them in 20 things, you know? And it's just like, your brain just will not let you rest. You know, it's like, nope, 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 nope. Like, you will have this rattling around in your skull for goddamn ever, for, like, nothing useful. No, nothing. Nothing at all. And it's just like, and he's definitely one of those actors where, and I always think of him too, like, the first one I think of with this one is I think of, it was a Ghostbusters 2. He played the judge. Yeah, the mean judge at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, and so that's why immediately his face, you go, oh, yeah, that face. Like, God damn it, what is that from? And it's like, yeah, and for you, Mr. Tully. Like, oh, yeah, that's him.
Yeah, I just think of him as Quentin Travers from the episode of Buffy where he comes in as the Watcher. And the episode where she's being tested and has to lose her strength and all that shit.
Oh, gosh, yeah, good gravy.
Yeah. So, yeah, this, like, it's not a stone-cold classic like Nightmare on Elm Street, and it's not a stone-cold, weird-ass, you really should be watching this, like Dead Heat, or the one with the alien guy who takes over the dead cop's body.
Oh, that's The Hidden.
What's that called?
The Wonderful, Wonderful Hidden.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not quite on that level, but... I think it did have more going on than a lot of, like, you're just basic 80s schlock. A little better paced, a little better acted, a little more, like, light on its feet.
Yeah, for sure, kinda. Definitely.
Anything else we want to say with this one, dudes?
No, I think I'm good.
Yeah, for me, this was like a... I'll put it at a 7. It was fun. I'll give it a 7 out of 10. E.G. Daly's weird voice that defined the 80s.
Yeah, oddly, I'm going to make this probably my highest rated movie this week because it was definitely the most fun to watch. This one had me laughing out loud and saying, what the fuck, aloud more than once. So that's usually a good sign. So, plus, I love Dean Cameron so hard. So, yeah, I'll say 6 out of 10. Fingers crossed for Ski School 3.
Ski School 2. In 1 year, he had, like, what was it, Rockula, Men at Work, and Ski School. Which is like 1990. It was been a year for the Cameron household.
Yeah, for a while there, he was like basically on par with Rob Lowe, and then they just went two different directions.
Like, sorry, the eyebrows are not in fashion anymore.
Charlie, yeah, what I mean, you I think this is it's just really not boring. I think it's a fun little oddity. I kind of would love for somebody who's not me to write a long, exhaustive article about all the different medical-related ones of these kind of minor movies from the eighties into the '90s. Because like, you know, there's the ones that we know, of course. You know, there's like Dr. Giggles, you know, naturally, and stuff like that. But I mean, it's like there's all these other weird ones that like just pop on the fringes. Like this will be one of those. You know, and then you had there's a movie with the ambulance. You know, James Earl Jones, what the hell is the other one? I don't know. There's a couple of ones that popped into my head that were medical related. And it's like, it just seemed like that was one of those things that, like, you know, these, you know, we talked about, like, you know, child antichrist kind of themed things, like, sure. And then we have, you know, some other, like, kind of groupings of stuff. I would love to somebody to just find, like, kind of maniacal, like, evil mad doctor kind of stuff that came from the 80s into the 90s. Cause, like, it feels like there's a bunch of them. And there's just stuff. There's a few more that I'm just forgetting, but there's just the dentist with Corbin Burns. That's another one. Just kind of oddball things, you know, stuff like that. Where it's like, just feels like there's a bunch of that kind of shit. Where it's just sort of just weird, off the wall kind of stuff that, you know, why it exists. Like, who the hell knows? But there's a market for it. So I'd like somebody else to write that article, not me.
Did you put a number on this?
I guess I should probably do that. Let's say 6. Let's say 6.5 out of 10. 6.5 out of 10. 6.5 out of 10. I mean, you know, there's no smoking in group. I mean, you shouldn't be smoking in group. I mean, what's wrong with you, lady? Come on. Because every time she was always had a cigarette, and I was just like, what? Stop! It's ridiculous. This is, and also, she looks like some like kind of weird alternate version of that red-haired lady from The Office.
Yeah. Well, all right, dudes, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with movies for next week. So for next week, we kind of all picked some movies and then we decided to watch them, and that's how it's going to go. There's an 80s movie we're going to watch from Mr. Charles Dickens Butterman. Called Superstition. Yes. Writing's on the Wall. We're going to watch that one. We're going to watch the latest installment of the Into the Dark series on Hulu, which is so not a TV series. It's just a sequence of films. That's called All That We Destroy. And then we're going to watch my cinematic debut, Bubba Hotep. I am sure that I am not visible in the scene that I was present for the filming of, but it's a fun story that I will tell over and over again, because frankly, there aren't that many interesting things about me.
I completely forgot about that till just now. Good Lord. That's so funny.
Yeah. We'll talk about it next week. How, like, that I get to be 7 degrees from Kevin Bacon because I was in a movie technically with Bruce Campbell. And that's the best way to be anything is technically. So, with that... our short is called...
How to Be Alone.
What's it called? How to Be Alone, and that will be linked on the show notes as usual. So Superstition, All That We Destroy from the Into the Dark series, and Bubba Hotep. And I've been Josh this entire time, and I'll say goodbye.
As far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin, bringing all the technical difficulties this week, all the technical difficulties that you could ever hope to imagine to have. But hopefully next week it'll be a little smoother. But anyway, in the meantime, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. And we'll talk towards you again real soon. Take care of yourselves. Bye bye.